At our friend Katie's church in Texas, one of their core practices is that they do beauty for our God who is beautiful. For them, that's right up there with justice for queer people and kindness for neurodiverse people and real relationships and spreading the gospel. Making beauty for our God who is beautiful makes their top five. Some of you might remember Katie because she preached our installation service. Their church's website says that they try every single Sunday to create beautiful worship. They promise candles and twinkly lights and delicious communion bread. I've only gotten to go to church there once, and it was just as another wave of COVID was hitting Texas, and I was preaching, and I was exhausted after a weekend intensive, and I was preaching to a very small crowd of people, most of whom were disappointed that it wasn't Katie at the pulpit. But even so, their worship is beautiful, and the big red barn where they meet is a delight with wonderful touches at every turn. For each sermon series, the chancel is redesigned by a creative team to whom Katie has sometimes just handed her church credit card. That is the kind of beauty I'm after. It's the kind of beauty that I wish I had more time and energy for, or that we had a team to work on it, or a budget line item called beauty. In that way, I am just one of many Protestants who has come late to the game, the idea of beauty as an important part of worship. I'm just one of many, many Protestants who came to understand that it's important and not just mere aesthetics. In case you did not grow up like I did, decrying beauty in worship as merely aesthetic, it's one of the not so subtle ways that Protestants disparage Catholics. If you dodged it, lucky you. Basically, anybody who went out of their way to make worship beautiful and particular. I am just one of many Protestants late to this game, like my fellow Protestant, Richard Beck, who wrote the book that inspired this whole Disenchanted series. Richard Beck is a guy that Vince, when he recommended the book to me, described as another Protestant fetishizing Catholicism. By which I took Vince to mean some of what I feel, that folks who grew up Catholic, for example, roll their eyes when yet another Protestant discovers candles or incense or icons or a beautiful space for worship. Because, like, they've heard about it, you know? They've heard about it, and also maybe the church has abused it, sometimes prioritizing beauty when bread is needed, and also the church has weathered criticism of that abuse, and the church still continues to insist that one of the things that our God needs is beauty, and one of the things that God's people need is beauty. I am one of those Protestants who, however belatedly, agrees. Even if, fully halfway through a series about re-enchanting our faith, I have failed to do anything particular for our God who is beautiful. Thank you to Neil for flowers this morning and to Nick and Yasko for making beautiful music, otherwise regular. Our God who is beautiful desires beauty for themselves and for us. The God of the Bible is so beautiful that each time Moses summited Mount Sinai to receive the law and came back down to share the news with the people, he didn't know it at first, but his face was shining. Shining because he had been talking with God. And the effect of it was terrifying. His brother Aaron and all the people were afraid to come near him. Eventually, Moses took to wearing a veil because of it. He would talk to God, report out to the people, and then he would veil again. Here's how it started. There was thunder and lightning and a thick cloud on the mountain and a blast of trumpet so loud that everybody trembled. Moses brought the people out of the camp where they were to meet God, and the mountain was wrapped in smoke because God had descended on it in fire, and the whole mountain shook violently. How beautiful! A pillar of cloud, a pillar of fire, beautiful. And anyone who touches the mountain while God is there will die. Beautiful. Moses' face shining behind his veil, terrifying. If I had prioritized time and energy, I would have made an altarscape like probably any clergywoman, with twinkling lights and maybe mason jars, a profusion of flowers. We may yet do that exact thing. But God's beauty standards are not our beauty standards. Some of what God finds beautiful is terrifying to us. The Sharing Place is a house in Salt Lake City. I heard about it on the radio. It is, the reporter said, a kind of place where kids come to have death explained to them. This is how the executive director, Jill, describes having a heart attack. Your heart stops working, and it can't move your blood through your body, and you die. Kidney failure. Your kidneys are washing machines for your blood, and when they stop working and your blood's dirty, then it poisons you, and you die. She can talk like this about overdoses, suicide, cancer, with little kids who are there because one of their family members has died. Sometimes the adult who brings the kid hasn't been able to tell them exactly what has happened. Jill and others like her can help. And the kids have to know the truth before they can join a support group. And that's the main thing that happens at the Sharing Place. The main thing that heals kids who have been through something terrible. I've known quite a few kids who lost a parent to something terrible. Or really, I've known quite a few parents of those kids. I usually have known the surviving parent when they came to me to do a funeral. And I've heard explanations about why their kids aren't ready for the truth because it's too hard, or can't attend the funeral because they're too little. And those impulses make sense to me. I've known, and this will sound funny at first, but I've known because of my work on farms and around farm families, I've known a lot of kids who know a lot about death and sex too, but especially death, because I think that's actually the big taboo in our culture. Anyway, I have known kids who have thought and learned a lot about death, which doesn't make it easier, but they can handle it. Jill at the Sharing Place talks to kids about the difference between contagious and not contagious. You can't catch somebody's cancer. She talks about the difference between choice and not choice. Cancer isn't a choice. Murder is a choice. Somebody chooses to make somebody else's body stop working. Terrifying. The first time I heard the story, when it ended, I cried and cried. Those little kids, all that loss, all that terrible hard work they had to do because of something someone chose or didn't choose, I cried, like ugly cried out loud. And then I immediately listened to the story again because it was so beautiful. And I want to make a few caveats. You don't have to go find this story and listen to it. I might be a masochist. You also don't have to seek out any terrible, terrifying content and engage with it. For one thing, it'll find you, and whatever finds you will be plenty. Right around the time I was first discovering that our beautiful God might appreciate beauty and want it for her people, I got a gift. A friend, a Catholic friend, metaphorically slapped some sense into me regarding my old biases. I was flippantly making fun of high rituals and high liturgy, my Protestant God so casual and close and easygoing. "You don't think you should bow your head in the presence of the creator of the universe?" she asked. Fair. This week, I was thinking too of another friend who'd gone to a farming conference at my alma mater. She was disgusted as she described the event to me. "Put on by my fellow alums. There was no coffee," she groused, "only herbal tea. The hospitality was a basket of apples and a loaf of bread, roughly torn up and set directly on the table." I was defensive. We were hippies. We were anti-capitalist. We were apparently anti-caffeine. We were different, I protested. She was not having it. "I just think if you're going to invite people into your space, you should be more welcoming and consider what they need." This week, I have both of these women echoing in my ear, suggesting that maybe the creator of the universe would appreciate a little attention to detail. After all, we're made in their image. And they can number the hair on our heads. And they planted the beautiful Fibonacci sequence and conch shells and sunflowers and fern fronds. Their eye is on the sparrow. Why shouldn't we pay a little attention? This week, I hear both of their voices. I still believe that God shows up at a communion table dusty with crumbs and bad gluten-free bread and apologies box wine. But I also hear my old friends suggesting that maybe we should find a tablecloth. Thank you, Rochelle, for buying a lovely new one. Open a fresh bottle of juice. And some of you know that I now strongly believe not just in coffee, but in real cream. But I also know that the beauty of God is not half and half and twinkle lights and handmade pottery to hold the bread. That kind of beauty does not make people tremble with fear. That kind of beauty is not what people for millennia have turned to in the most terrible moments of their lives. One day near the end of my time at that college full of dirty herbal tea drinking hippies, I was walking the long path between the library and the dorms. And ahead of me were a couple of other women who I noticed were now, in fact, women. Like when we got there, we were kids, you know, scrawny hipsters or dorky teenagers like me. And now 4 years later, we were young adults. Our bodies had changed and we inhabited them differently. And we were, of course, still very young. And it was, of course, a fairly uninspired revelation by a very young person. Mostly just, I noticed the passage of time. But the moment stands out to me in part because all of these years later, I have had many opportunities to be grateful that that place is where I first became an adult. Grateful that I was formed by the norms and standards of that community, even the superficial ones. Like we were an unusual crowd by the culture standards, pierced and tattooed with dyed hair and goth clothes or homemade dresses. We were body positive before it was corporate and gender fluid before it had a name. And as a small result, my beauty standards were shaped by that place and those people. Not that I can't see what others see in like magazine pretty people. It's just that my standards are specific. And while it's superficial, it's not unimportant to who and how I am. Church is a community where we are shaped by God's standard of beauty. God who has told you, O mortal, what is good. God who anoints you to bring good news to the oppressed and bind up the brokenhearted. God who in the flesh was nothing to write home about looks-wise, that's if you take Isaiah 53 to be about Jesus. God who in the flesh sought to feed and heal and forgive and touch people who the culture looked away from. God who in the flesh told us to do the same. Church is a community to make beauty for our God who is beautiful. Beauty that can sometimes look terrible. I thought, of course, this week about why I find the story of the sharing place beautiful. One, I care about kids and I take their experience seriously. I take it seriously and I take them seriously. But also the adults in that story are so clear and honest and focused on the healing of somebody else. The adults in that story invite terribly hurt kids into a community where they can access healing. The adults are moved to act in response to pain, to bind up the brokenhearted. It's a place where nobody shushes them about their terrible losses. A place where they can bring and be them their whole selves, screaming and punching pillows in a room called the Volcano Room, or they can play games, or they can dress up like the classics, ballerina, police, cowboy. It's a place where kids introduce themselves using their names and who died and how. For a lot of them, it's a parent by suicide. It's terrible. It's terrifying. The beauty of God is sufficient to our worst circumstances. It must be. It must be more than candles and icons and a beautifully laid table. God's beauty is more terrifying and powerful than that. And church is one place to learn to encounter the breadth of it, to be formed by God's beauty standard, which is one that invites our whole selves. It gives us a place to name the worst that's happened and a way to hope for what's next. a place to share who we are and shoulder the burdens that the others bear, a place for honesty and clarity and healing, a place to bow our heads in the presence of the creator of the universe, who is also casual and close and easygoing, a place to weep and be comforted, a place to raise our heads again, and from where we go, commissioned to love the world as God does, trembling at the beauty of it, our faces shining.